Some of the topics in this episode are graphic in nature and may be disturbing to some listeners, especially children. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Marisol Nichols. Now, you may know me as an actress from film and television. What you may not know is that I have been working in the anti-trafficking movement for over a decade. I've been honored to work alongside law enforcement as an undercover operative, both in the U.S. and abroad, to help put bad guys in jail and help rescue some women and children. I created my foundation for a slavery-free world and this podcast to help prevent you or your loved ones from ever falling prey to these predators. Thank you, and welcome to the Marisol Nichols Podcast. My guest today is Her Royal Highness, Princess Eugenie. I am so impressed with this woman. I'm going to give you a little bit of, just a tiny bit of the accomplishments that this woman has done. Princess Eugenie has been working against modern day slavery since 2012. She set up Key to Freedom, which is a social enterprise initiative that essentially supports and facilitates products made by the survivors of trafficking at the Women's Interlink Foundation. In 2017, she set up, along with her best friend, Julia de Boinville, the Anti-Slavery Collective, which brings together change makers and raises awareness against modern day slavery as a global epidemic. So you can imagine how much I love this woman. I was honored to be on the Floodlight podcast, which she produces along with her best friend, Julia. And I'm going to give you just a little bit more of this woman's accomplishments. So Princess Eugenie has worked across the board with leaders in the fight against modern day slavery. She has visited survivors with the United Nations Trust Fund to end violence against women and the Salvation Army. She has spoken with world leaders at the Nexus Global Summit and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe's Alliance. She has worked with the McCain Institute, the Freedom Fund, and many, many, many other organizations. She is a patron of Anti-Slavery International and honestly, just an incredible woman. Please welcome to the podcast Her Royal Highness, Princess Eugenie. I actually did want to acknowledge you, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. You are in a position, you know, people say this to me like, well, you're in a position, you can speak, people will listen to you. I'm not in half a position where people will listen to me than you are. And you've chosen to use your voice on such an incredibly, incredibly dark subject as modern day slavery. And I'm in awe of that. I love that. Thank you so much. And can you take my audience through back in 2012, when you first started learning about this issue and sort of how you began this journey?
Yeah, of course. And I just want to say there that I think it's the opposite. I think you have like a really powerful voice. And this is something that I guess in the modern slavery world, it's really difficult to find people to talk about it, I find. And so thank you for you raising your voice for doing it, because it makes me happy. So I 2012, I went to India with my mum and my best friend Jules, who I set up the Anti-Slavery Collective with. And we went to meet this woman called Aloka Mitra, who set up a charity called the Women's Interlink Foundation. And she's this lovely mama in Calcutta, and she rescues traffic women from the streets, and she puts them in a home, and she teaches them how to print on fabrics, how to make bags, how to do scarves, how to make, you know, beautiful Indian silk dresses and beautiful products like that. And these girls, when they learn how to do this, you know, they then sell their products. It gives them a wage, it gives them sort of a skill, it gives them a focus, and then they are not vulnerable to being re-trafficked or going back to their traffickers, which is a lot of the time what happens. And when we went out there, we realized these products were so beautiful. So we sort of set up this little organization called Key to Freedom. And we sold them online, and we partnered with Topshop and different organizations to
amazing.
Yeah. Sell these products. And then the girls would get the money. So it was really lovely, special thing to do. And that was our first understanding of, or hearing the term modern slavery. I was 21. I'd only ever heard of slavery that we read about and learn about in school. And this was a new, very different term and terminology. And we kind of thought, I didn't realize it existed. Let's delve into this. Let's become our investigators, our detectives. And we came back to the UK and we met with as many people who would listen and take a meeting with us and learned sort of around the legislation, around who was leading the fight, what was happening. And we basically realized that someone is enslaved within a mile of where you live. And it's such a hidden crime. You know, it's something that definitely goes under the radar with a lot of exploited people. And from those meetings, we went to our first safe house and we met this amazing survivor called Seema. And Seema, I walked in, there was a group of 12 women with their children, some had babies, and they were in this safe house being looked after by these amazing charities and organizations that have worked fighting to end modern slavery for, you know, so many years, much longer than I've been in it. And these people are incredible. The work, the people that work for these charities, but also the survivors. Like Seema, she smiled, big, huge smile, and was like, I'm going to be a social worker and I'm going to end modern slavery and this is how I'm going to do it. I want to do it with you guys. Can I come and join you guys? You know, she was so strong and relaxed and happy. And it was such a lesson because I'd been complaining that morning about traffic or being late and panicking and, oh my God, it's raining and stupid stuff that really is so irrelevant. And she had just said to me, you know, oh, I want to end modern slavery. Can we do it together? After everything she'd been through, she wanted to do, and she was the one being the like tough one. And it really sent us into like, let's go and start a collective, the anti-slavery collective, to raise awareness and bring people together to end modern slavery. And yeah, we've been doing it now for a few years and we're really proud of our work we do with survivors. You know, that's something that is so key to us, to always be remembering, you know, the survivor voice and what they're going through.
It's beautiful. And I love that. And I know that feeling of coming face to face with a survivor and seeing that light is still in them and that drive is still in them to now take what they've been through and do something with it and help make a difference. And it's just so beautiful. And I really do understand. I, you know, exactly when you're, you know, bitching about the traffic or like, oh, there's too long of a line to get my coffee. You're like, oh my God, what am I complaining about? Like, this is my first world problems. Come on.
Right.
And I love what you said about trafficking happens within a mile of wherever your home is. And I've never heard that. And it's so true. And I think when I'm educating people about it, they don't realize that because they think, oh, it's India, it's Pakistan, it's the Philippines, it's, you know, Thailand. It doesn't happen here or down the street. And they're always shocked to learn that no, trafficking is anywhere where there's vulnerability.
I think also what's kind of hard to translate for people unless you're in the movement is that, you know, the word trafficking exists for so many different things, but, you know, it could be construction, it could be unfair pay, right. people whose their employers are holding their passports and things like that, you know, right. That is a form of slavery, it's a form of trafficking.
100%.
That's what's difficult is that to it not just be about either sex trafficking or when you think about brothels in Thailand, it's, right. You know, it's not, it's also whether or not your cleaner or your driver or, you know, people are being paid correctly. That's what I think it has to be translated for people. And you have to, that's what we're raising awareness for is like, have you asked the question, you know, where are your clothes coming from? As an English person, we don't really ask questions, you know, we kind of, you know, it's not really us, there's something to do. But if you see someone in a situation, you know, ask them, check how they are. Are they okay? Is there someone, you know, I went to an event a few years ago. I remember I spoke with, it was a women's club in London somewhere. And I spoke about this. I spoke about like, you know, different companies, you know, withholding passports or pay. And this woman stood up and was like, well, I have a cleaning company that comes to my house. And these two guys always talk to me and I never speak to the cleaners and the women that come in. And she was like, but it sounds like that's a form of trafficking. What do I do? And I was like, she was so shocked. And I was so impressed that she managed to come out and tell it in front of these people. But it right. showed, you know, if there are people speaking on behalf of someone else, or, you know, you can see these small signs, and it definitely is, you know, that's trafficking. That's a form of it.
100%. And, you know, I did this event a while back, and we brought on someone who was an expert in finding those people who are brought to this country and are stuck in a life where they work, you know, all day long for no pay. They can't leave, they can't quit, and they're held against their will. And that's 100% a form of modern day slavery and trafficking. And one of the things that she also talked about was, you know, when you go to those sort of like all you can eat, well, you probably don't, but all you can eat like Chinese buffets or whatever, all you can eat, like these places, right? And you look inside and there's cameras, but the cameras are in the inside.
Wow.
Why are the cameras on the inside? You would think cameras would be on the outside. And so we went through a whole thing of these certain things to look for and then to report it. And it's so true that I love that you were at an event where just someone was like, oh, I've seen that.
Yeah.
I know something about that, because it is that prevalent and it's right under our noses and people do not know.
Exactly. It's like I spoke to a guy in a safe house once who was, I think, from Bangladesh. And he had been working as a bottle washer in the back of the restaurant, in the Bangladeshi restaurant in, you know, Surrey or something in the UK. And he'd been there for 20 years, didn't speak English, you know, and his traffickers or his, you know, his people that were exploiting him were people who just spoke the language and then spoke English. Right. And he just didn't know what was going on. He didn't know he was enslaved. And now he's, thank God, he now was looked after by the Salvation Army, which do amazing things in the UK. I don't know if they do that the same in America.
Not that I know. Well, I mean, not that I want to diss them. I actually don't know. I've never heard their name come up in this world that I've been working in, but maybe they do.
In the UK, they're really great. They take a lot of the survivors in when they've wow. been through the system. And so it's, you know, it's a wonderful organization that you can really look at. You can go and meet survivors and they're safe. They're in their safe houses.
Oh, that's amazing. That definitely does not happen. Not happen in the United States. Okay. So let's talk about the Anti-Slavery Collective. Can you tell me about how you and your partner, Jules or Julia, started this and what it is that you all do?
Yeah. So we started it in 2017. When we went to visit the safe house and we met Seema, we realized that we never want to reinvent the wheel. People have been doing this for so many years. It's like people are already doing the great work. We just wanted to be able to shout about it louder and make sure that people are aware of what, you know, the great things that are happening. Because I think I was explaining that so often this can feel really frustrating and like you can't do anything about it and how difficult that can be. But actually, there are some hopeful things happening and we want to bring that to people's mindsets, you know. So we wanted to become a convening space for charities and organizations, survivors and people to learn about, you know, modern slavery and what they can do, but also sort of bring it to the masses, get everyone out there asking the question and making sure what they're doing is not exacerbating a situation for people, you know. And the collective now, you know, we're really proud of it. It's tiny. It's me and Jules. And we've got three employees, I think. And we are all about the survivor voice, bringing their voice, you know, to the forefront of people's minds. We do regular visits with them. We've got our own podcast, which you very kindly came on. Mm-hmm. We do little events. You know, our strategic pillars are focusing on education. So we really want to try and hit as many young people as possible to really know, like, it's not just about trafficking. It's about like empathy and understanding vulnerability and, mm-hmm. you know, not to feel alone. Like, where do you go when this happens? Or like, how do you know what your rights are and things like that? So it's, you know, that's quite key. Education is our very much our focus. And then campaigning, and also responsible consumerism. So working with businesses that really look after their employees, but also want to check their supply chains and want to know, you know, want to be the leaders of this, because there are companies out there that are doing so many amazing things. And nowadays businesses have to work, you know, five times harder than everybody else, because they've got climate change, they've got mental health, you've got modern slavery, you've got, you know, these companies that they've got really, really hardcore consumers who are going to hold them to account. And if you've got slavery in your supply chain, it's bad for business. So that really is one of our other strategic pillars, is just focusing on how companies, you know, we don't want to point the finger and say you're doing a bad job. We want people to know that this is okay and we can do something about it together. And there are amazing charities and NGOs and organizations that can help.
I love that so much. It's funny because I focus so much on the sex trafficking. It's just sort of the niche that I, through doing this, fell into. But they do tie over, you know, when you look at supply chains and most, you know, this comes out in the fashion industry every once in a while, like probably once every couple of years. It's like, oh, so, and it comes out that these companies have in their supply chains slave labor. When you trace it all the way back, where are the clothes coming from? Like you mentioned. And, you know, I would hope, I like to optimistically say perhaps the CEOs don't know that. Maybe they don't know where the things are coming from. Maybe they're, you know, the way these things work is there's a supplier and then another middleman and another and another and another. And it's how these things get lost. But, you know, I went into one of the ops that I did. I went to the border of Dominican Republic and Haiti, and I have all the footage of this. I haven't released it yet. We should talk about it after when we're off camera. But it was an American vegetable company, like a giant company. And if you saw the conditions of these Haitians, and it's almost unspeakable.
Right.
The conditions in which these people were living and operating in, existing in, and it's just,
yeah,
you can't fathom it. And I still have it, and I'm sort of pulling the string on it and gathering so that I can actually turn it over somewhere where someone can actually look into this and do something about it. But it's such a giant issue that from what I've found, and I don't know what you've found in the UK, but I have found that at least in America, legislation and Congress and everyone are still just catching up to the problem. Like, there's not enough laws in place yet.
Yeah, the UK have been like the leaders of the pack when it comes to legislation. So Theresa May, our former prime minister, who's actually a board member on our charity, she sort of founded the Modern Slavery Act in 2015, which was the first type of legislation that really sort of gave, you know, law enforcement and the judicial system a framework of which to prosecute and work with. It's the Modern Slavery Act. But I don't know about America. And I out of interest, just to go back, did you, when you went there, were you undercover? I mean, did you just go? And have you spoken to the company how did you get in there? Sorry, now I'm turning the questions on you.
No, it's all good. We were undercover. We were looking for a little boy who had been trafficked out of Haiti a while back. And we had gotten a tip where this kid may have been in that camp. So we were there. It was after a bunch of other operations that we had done. And so since we were already in those countries, we went to go see if he was possibly being held there and part of this slave labor camp. And he was not, unfortunately.
And I mean, one thing, how do you get then the company to, how do you show them what you found?
I have no clue. It's on these ops, I'm sort of along for the ride. I get told what we're doing. I don't put them together. I just get a phone call. Can you come? And I'll go. And it's, as you said, like it's me and like three employees for Slavery Free World. We're doing it all. And it's sort of like, you know, one of the things that we focus on is the education, but mainly from a preventative side. Cause I was sort of like, look, I'm not law enforcement. Although I did think of quitting acting and becoming law enforcement so I could continue to do this. Right. But it was sort of like, okay, well, I have this platform. Young kids watch Riverdale. Teenagers watch Riverdale. Moms watch Riverdale. Teachers watch Riverdale. Let me use that audience and do what I can with them directly so that I can educate them enough of what to look for, how to help protect themselves, their families, their loved ones, and from ever falling into the hands of these predators. But I focus mainly on sex trafficking because of it's just sort of where my background is and where I fell into. So when we're off, I'm going to find a way to send you what I have found. I think I have the name of the company. I can't remember if it was an American company or I think it was a Mexican company. I have to double check it all. Okay. But I know the organization that I was working with has all that information.
Interesting.
They have all of that. Yes. Let's go back to the Floodlight podcast that I was so honored to be a part of. You have had some incredible guests on that. Oh. I was like, really? I'm so excited. Can you talk a little bit about your podcast and your show?
Yeah, thank you. It's podcasting is hard. I don't know what you think, but it's a great way for people to listen and learn. And it's again, like, unsavory is not an easy subject. You know, Jules and I always talk about smuggling information. Like, mm-hmm. It isn't, you know, I want people to listen in because they've got Marisol on the podcast, and then hit them with, you know, actually this is what you do in your free time. And it's the same that goes for, you know, people in the sports industry or musicians like One Republic. You know, they're doing amazing things with their platform. And I guess the whole point of our podcast is like, it's in everything and it touches all parts of society, like from sports to fashion to music to acting. And actually people are doing things about it. You can too, you know. I think always Jules and I, like, we want it to be hopeful. Like, you don't, it doesn't have to feel like you can't do something about it. You can. So that's why we started doing it. And, you know, we do it for SEMA and all the survivors that we work with. You know, we want to get the message across there that this happens, this exists, and it's a man-made problem. Society makes these issues, you know, and we can end it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I have that same struggle of sort of like, how do I present this topic in a way that isn't so overwhelming and sad and heartbreaking that people will continue to tune in and continue to be inspired as opposed to devastated.
Exactly.
You know? So I feel your struggle.
That's the key. It's like, in my mind, we've got to do right by these women and girls and boys and men. And, you know, the right way of doing it is by saying, like, it's okay. Like, let's all do it together. These are the resources. This is what you look for. Like, if you don't know, like, if you walk past someone on the street and you think they're having a trouble, what on earth are you meant to do? If you don't know where your tools are and how you can access the information, like, people are stuck and then you feel so helpless. But if you give them, you know, the right information, what to do, how to help, you know, it just gives you that little bit of extra something that you're not just blinkers on throughout the whole of your life, you know?
Yes. I love that you mentioned that about that story that you were telling me and about being in the UK where people probably aren't used to invading other people's space. It's impolite. The same thing in America. Like, it's surprising to me that people won't just go, hey, do you need some help? Hey, are you okay? If you see something that doesn't seem right, and there's a campaign that's out that's finally like, look, if you see something, say something. Right. And I'm glad that's coming out because it is right under all of our noses. And once you're educated, and I don't know if you found this, but once I educate people or someone have heard me speak or listen to the podcast, all of a sudden they're like, oh, did you see this? And did you see this? And they start sending me like all these articles and all these things. It's like your eyes are open and you can't unsee it. Do you find that?
Oh my God. I mean, this is what I was mentioning. I think William Wilberforce, the guy who started the abolition movement, you know, back in the 1800s, he said, you may choose to look the other way, but you can never say you did not know. And obviously that is referring to, you know, to something 200 years ago, but nowadays it's the same thing. Like, we work with a company who were helping us with videos and, like, you know, content. And the guy we worked with, he all of a sudden was like, stopped taking his car to the car wash because there was slavery there. And he then started sending me all these links and being like, oh my God, I've realized so much about the world that I didn't before. I mean, it's so prevalent. And I actually was walking through LAX, I don't know, whenever I was, the other day after my work, my daytime job. And I saw these big signs on it, which was all about, like, modern slavery and sports. And I was just like, this is amazing to me, mm-hmm. finally, that people are looking up on a board and they're seeing the word modern slavery. I mean, not to rabbit on more, but Cindy McCain, who is an amazing, yeah. amazing woman, she always tells me this story about when she went to, you know, all these different conferences that she would go to, like whatever it was, and she'd be standing there and she'd be talking about modern slavery and people would just be like shutting her down, walking out of the room, not listening. And that was, you know, however many years ago. And now all of a sudden she's got a seat at the table. She's, you know, talking about huge issues about where trafficking exists and people are listening to her. And she always says that, like, the change from one moment to the next is just extraordinary. And, like, that's what I love to see is, like, you know, yes, it's a difficult subject, but the more you know, the more you can do.
100%. And it's funny because back in 2012, when I was meeting with everyone under the sun and anyone who would meet with me, I met with the McCain Institute.
Right.
And I didn't get to meet her, but I remember at the time I was like, wow, look at everything that they're doing. And it was actually, I met with, like, her second in command, and it was this, like, 6 foot tall blonde woman who, who used to, like, literally fly combat helicopters in the military. Yeah. And so I met with her and she actually inspired me. She doesn't know this. She actually inspired me. And she sat down and she said, look, everyone wants to raise awareness. What do you want to do? What do you want to do? And I remember going, I actually don't know yet. And I was just on the journey of learning and what I could do and still learning about it. But she inspired me. And I talk about her from time to time. She has no idea. So anyway.
Hopefully she's listening.
Yeah. Fun story. Exactly. And I also want to comment on the anti-slavery collective, because you said something about you don't want to reinvent the wheel. Mm. And one of the things that I have found in this space, and I assume that you found the same thing, is that the good news is that there's all these organizations already filling holes and doing things about this issue and combating it from different sides. And what I've found is, look, there's room for everyone.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it can sometimes be like, well, I'm doing this or I'm doing that. But what I found in this issue is that everyone has to work together to combat this. And so I love the anti-slavery collective, because it's collecting all of these voices and sort of honing them in a way that they can all be best utilized with talking with each other and working together.
Yeah. And when I first set it up, in my head, I was like, I want to be this umbrella organization where we all come together to do something about it. And, you know, if I'm focusing on education, I want to hear from all the charities that are doing stuff on education around this, because if you're doing it, great, I don't need to do it then. But if not, let's work together and I can share the load with you, and I can talk about it loudly on your podcast or mine or whatever it is. And, you know, make sure that it's there, it's right there for people. I think there's something around protecting survivors and making sure that we call it not exacerbating their trauma and not utilizing their story again and again, because at the end of the day, these women and girls, men and boys, they have to tell their story 100 times over. And, you know, that doesn't need to be the case. We can advocate on behalf of people that actually just are like, I don't need to re-traumatize myself. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really important as well to think about when we're advocating, when people are learning about this subject. It's like, you know, you can advocate on behalf of people.
I love that. And it's so true, because it can then get exploitive again,
right,
by having them tell their story again and again. And you know, I found that you can say a lot with very few words. You don't need to give details. People have imaginations. That's all you need to know, you know?
Right.
We're going to wrap up shortly, but I wanted to ask you, because I found this for me, as a mom dealing with this, you're a new mom, your second boy. How has that, because for me, it's affected me. I now have a teenage daughter. And with all the stories that I know and all the pitfalls and all the traps that they can fall into, knowing this world so intimately, it colors everything that I do. And so I wanted to, you're shaking your head yes for my audience who's going to be listening to this on audio. Can you talk a little bit about how, as a mom, this sort of work, just how it affects you and how it changes everything?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny. My mom brought me and my sister up to always advocate on behalf of other people. So I've always been kind of connected. I've always wanted to do it. I've never not been that way. And then having two boys, I think, you know, having children in general, it all of a sudden changes you. I now obviously want to do this more than ever before, but I also want them to see me do it, you know, and have that like inspiration of like, oh, mommy wants to change the world. Mommy wants to make it a better place. And they're so little now, 16 weeks. And I don't know if I'm going to date myself or date the podcast, but you know, they're 16 weeks and 2.5. And I want them to treat their friends, and I want them to look after people that they might love when they're older. And I want them to be able to protect people if they need to, you know? So I think, I don't know, it's, I want to, with everything, I want to inspire, you know, anyone who I meet about this. And I think, I don't know, that sounds arrogant. I didn't mean to make it sound like that, but I want people to see the example and think, okay, cool. You know, like go and pick up the piece of plastic on the beach. I always do that because I just, you know, I want my kid to know that like he can do that too. It's just leading by example, I guess. But I think, yeah, it's interesting.
It is. And, you know, having my daughter's older, she's 15 now, but she's been watching me do this, you know, for a very, very long time. And she doesn't have all the details. She just knows sort of what I do, but I wanted to, same thing. I wanted to put in my daughter's mind always that there's a world out there that doesn't just involve you and your intimate problems, but there's others, and others need help. And she, I will say, at least from my own experience, it does work. And she'll be like, mama, like even to a baby crying on a plane, she's like, mama, you have to help. Can you go talk to the parents? Because she's seen me do that. She's seen me get up from my seat and go help a mom with a crying baby who wouldn't stop crying. She's seen me help the person that's fallen down. And again, I don't mean to talk about myself, but the point is that they do watch everything that we do. And that leading by example is vital. And so if it helps with my daughter watching me do this for 10 years, she now has that mindset of she won't sit back quietly if she's watching somebody in need.
Amazing.
She'll help.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very good parenting as well.
Well done to you as well. Is there any sort of stories or anything that has stuck with you in your travels or learning in this line of work that you can share with my audience that you really find inspiring, or just one of those things that just don't leave you? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think Seema's story that I briefly mentioned, you know, she was trafficked by her next door neighbor in Manchester to a gang. I think that has stayed with me forever because it was the first time I realized that you can be trafficked or you can be within modern slavery, even by your next door neighbor, or, you know, you can be vulnerable. And that really stuck with me. But also I met someone who, you know, she helped out. She helped me out when I was having, I had my first baby, and she came to look after my son for a couple of weekends, and she heard me on calls for the Anti-Slavery Collective, and she said to me, I didn't know that you did this charity. You know, I'd love to learn a bit more. And I told her a bit about it, and she heard more of my calls. And she eventually came to me after a few weeks and said, you know, I was trafficked, I think, by my employer, you know, 10 years ago. And I didn't know I was, but I think I was, and I really want some help. And wow. I obviously was incredibly shocked by the fact that she'd sort of just been listening to me, and now she's okay now. But I just introduced her to a network of people, like-minded people like her, who she could talk to. And she had a couple of coffees with me and Jules and the people we work with in our charity. And she just said it changed her life. The fact that she could talk to someone, and the fact that she knew there were other people out there who had been through the same situation as her. And that stuck with me because I didn't do very much. I connected her with someone, and I also just spoke to her about it, and it made her feel less alone. And I think that's what I want to get across to the people listening today. It's like, don't feel disheartened by the subject, by the numbers, by the fact that there's 50.3 million people in the world enslaved. Like, you can do something about it. And if you just care, and if you listen, and if you want to research, like, do all the work, learn about as much as you can, because just by being aware, it's helping. And not to feel disheartened, that's my biggest lesson. That's what I want to say. It's like, anyone can do anything they put their mind to, and you can change the world, and you can make dreams happen. And I just think that's, you know, that's something that we all have to take forward within us, you know, throughout the world, you know. Pay it forward. There was a film, that guy, you know, Pay It Forward. It was, that's how I think you should do it.
That's so beautiful. And by the way, you did do much with that woman, and you were able to connect her. You were there as a person who understood this issue. So therefore you were a safe person to talk to about it. And then you knew exactly where you could direct her and guide her to get more help. And to that person, you change their life. Yeah. It's huge.
Well, that's nice. That's so lovely to say. And I just think it's important that I think it's really important to know that if you change one person's life, you've done a really amazing thing. And so anyone listening today, you know, just you can change people's lives, even if it's one person.
I love that. Thank you. I don't want to go past that. That's just such a beautiful, beautiful message. Thank you for sharing.
Please join us in this fight. Go to slaveryfreeworld.org and donate. Every amount helps. I truly appreciate your support.
Thank you for listening to the Marisol Nichols podcast. And please do not forget to click like and subscribe. And a big shout out to WD Han for our theme song, Something's Gotta Change. See you next time.